Okay, good evening everybody, and welcome to the weekly shiur by Rabbi Feldman. This week's shiur is sponsored by the Zeidel family in memory of Marilyn's mother, Rivka Leah Bas Chaim. Again, if anybody would like to sponsor a future shiur, please contact me, Rabbi Feldman.
Good evening. I thought that since we're approaching Purim, so we would have a Purim series, including some discussion of Zohar. So I thought tonight to discuss in general all the different concepts of Zohar together, or at least some of them, it depends how you count. It's generally assumed that there are six Zohiris, which is a little bit of a question. Depends how you count. There are those who count fewer than this, there are those who count more, there are those who assume that there are four obligations of Zohar that are real, solid, and there are those who have more. If you look in Reb Levi Yitzchak of Adisha Sefer and Chumash, the Kedushas Levi, he's got a whole list there which includes the number that are not normally included, Mitzvah Zechiras Haman and Mitzvah Zechiras Eretz Yisrael. These are not normally counted in the list, but for the most part it's generally assumed there are six. Six times the Torah singles out a concept for remembrance purposes. And those six are Shabbos. We spoke about that recently, so we won't spend so much time on it tonight. Yetzias Mitzrayim, Maimed Har Sinai, Malik, the Egel Hazav, and Maisa Miriam. And those six form an interesting unit. What exactly they have to do with each other is a good question, and we'll try to suggest a little bit about that at the end. But first, just to briefly survey a little bit how the Halacha treats these six, because it is very interesting that these six are treated in radically different ways, halachically speaking. They have very little to do with each other. There's very little overlap between how these halachas are treated as far as one to another. And being that they're pretty much all phrased in the same language, with some exceptions, sometimes the Torah doubles the language. It says Zohar and Al-Tishgaf, especially in the context of a Malik, which is probably relevant, but for the most part we're basically dealing with comparable language between these six concepts, and the fact that they're treated differently by halacha is striking. In any event, that point, by the way, the fact that they could be treated differently by halacha, even presuming they are all mitzvahs d'oraisa, and we'll talk about that as well, there are some achronim who suggest that this is an example of a concept we find in halacha most prominently by Chol HaMoed, the concept of Masar HaKasa V'Chachamim. That Gemara Maseches Chagiga and Daf Yud-Chesh, and the Tosfos spells this out more, tells us that there is a kind of in-between status, that some things are Deraisa and some things are Drabanan, and some things are kind of in-between. And in the context of Melechus Chol HaMoed, is where we're introduced to this concept, that Tosfos points out, and the Gemara already has the phrase, that Melechus Chol HaMoed is a hard concept to pin down. On the one hand, it seems to be a prohibition in HaTorah to do Melechus Chol HaMoed, but if you learn the sugyas in Mordechai, and you get the impression it sounds like the Rabbanans, the type of halachas and the type of dinim that apply, sounds like the Rabbanans. So there, Rishonim explain that this is an example of this concept of Masur HaKasur L'Chachamim, that the concept itself is in HaTorah, the idea of not doing halacha and chalamoid is in HaTorah, but Chazal were given the keys, so to speak, to figure out exactly how it should be applied. Rav David Cohen, in one of his forum, Gvul Yavetz, has a whole essay about this, Kuntris Masur HaKasur L'Chachamim, and he digs up every other example. He has something like 50, 60 examples of areas of halacha where this principle is applied of Masur HaKasur L'Chachamim. So one of the examples you find in Achronim, there are a number of later Achronim who say this is one such example. That here you have mitzvos of Zechira from the Torah, and on the surface, the Chumash itself doesn't give us the reasons to distinguish between them as far as halachic practice. So looking at Psukim, if the words are essentially the same, so we don't really have any source in HaTorah to lead to different practices of halacha, so some suggest that this is an example of Masur HaKasur L'Chachamim, that the Torah says there's a mitzvah zechira, and the Rabbanan were given the rishus to define what that means practically speaking. Okay, so what does it mean practically speaking? So as I said, it varies greatly from one to another. So we won't spend so much time tonight talking about Zohar Shem HaShabbos L'Kacho, because that we spoke about just 2 weeks ago. So we'll just very briefly touch on it. but that is primarily understood as the mitzvah of Kiddush. And the mitzvah of Kiddush, as we discussed at that time, is the primary fulfillment of the mitzvah of Zachar Hashem HaShabbos L'Kadesho, even though there are other fulfillments also, as Ramban writes in Chumash, when you say Shir Shalom every day, and you say Hayom Yom Revi'i B'Shabbos, Hayom Yom Chamishi B'Shabbos, and you're counting down to Shabbos during the week, so that is a fulfillment of Zechir HaShabbos on some level. As the Gemara indicates, when you go shopping during the week and you say, I'm going to buy this for covered Shabbos, you're also fulfilling Zechir HaShabbos on some level. But primarily, Kiddush is the core fulfillment of this idea. And as we discussed a few weeks ago, it's Machlokas Rishonim, whether you fulfill this obligation in HaTorah just by speech, or whether there's a requirement of wine also on a level in HaTorah. The Gemara makes it clear there's a requirement of wine. There's some discussion whether that's the Rabbanim, that's the Raisa. A lot to be said about that, but again, that's for separate discussion. So when it comes to Shabbos, that's how it manifests itself primarily, through this obligation of Kiddush. Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim manifests itself in a completely different way. Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, we generally assume, is an obligation every day. This is what the Gemara has at the end of the first part of Brachas, and that's the Gimel, where the Gemara there tells actually it's not just every day, it's twice a day. Every day and every night, there is an obligation of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's generally fulfilled, as you can tell from the words of the Rambam of Soloveitchik and the whole shir, in which he made it more clear. You see it's really in the Rambam itself that we generally fulfill this obligation through Kriya Shema. That since we say three paragraphs of Kriya Shema, and you know, Kriya Shema itself we generally assume is a mitzvah min HaTorah, but it's a big machlokas rishon on what that means. How much of Kriya Shema is min HaTorah? There are those who say none of it, it's all the Rabbanan. It's a very small minority view in Rishonim. Most Rishonim assume that Kriya Shema on some level is Daraisa. But the question is how much. So you have some Rishonim will say only the first sentence, only Shema Yisrael is the Min HaTorah. Some Rishonim will say the first paragraph. Some will say the first two paragraphs. Brichadas writes, he thinks that's the real way to go. And there are those who say all three paragraphs. So all three paragraphs is a little difficult. Where would you see a source Min HaTorah that all three paragraphs of Kriya Shema are part of a biblical obligation? They're not together in the Torah. So to say that somehow the third paragraph of the Chiyuv Min HaTorah is difficult, because the first two paragraphs say Vishinantem within them, have the commandment included within them. But the third paragraph that we say with Kriya Shema, how do we know that that's an obligation of Min HaTorah? So some suggest, as the Rav expands on this, and it's really the words are in the Rambam himself, that this is a Min HaTorah because of the Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. That since there is an obligation to remember Mitzrayim, and since the third paragraph of Kriya Shema contains reference to Yetzias Mitzrayim, so therefore that's how we fulfill it, through attaching it with Kriya Shema. If you look in the Rav Shirim, we won't go into it too much tonight, but he also has a whole expansion on this idea of why specifically it's connected to Kriya Shema, that there is a interconnection between the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriya Shema. It's a certain kiyum that's fulfilled by doing it that way. That's a whole topic in and of itself. So assuming that that's the case, that it's a mitzvah every day, and it also spells itself out in other mitzvahs as well. For example, the mitzvah of tefillins, we have an element of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, even the element of Kiddush that we just mentioned. So Kiddush also requires Yetzias Mitzrayim included within it. There are many mitzvahs that have Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim as part of the broader mitzvah experience. So there are a number of different ways in which we fulfill this mitzvah. So the question that Prima Gadim and others ask is, so to borrow a phrase, so why is this night different from all other nights? What's special about Pesach night? If Pesach night is an obligation of the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, so how is that special at all if every day there's an obligation of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim? So there are a number of suggestions as to what exactly the distinction is. It's not so simple a question to answer. It seems to be on the surface that really this obligation does apply every day. So Achronim have a number of approaches. Some say that it has to do with this phrase, Sipur, that the Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim by itself, you could just do by yourself. And when it comes to the Seder night, there is a whole format of interaction with others, where we have the whole question and answer format, and the Manishtana, and we recite the Manishtana even if you're alone, because there is this talking about it idea, which doesn't apply to the daily obligation, or perhaps talking itself. Some suggest that during the day, a daily obligation, you can fulfill with hearer. If you just think about it, that would be enough. But in Pesach night, you have to speak it out. That's how the Chasam Sofer writes in the Tshuva. And others following along this path say that every day you can just mention it, that's enough. And Pesach night, you have to go into detail. You have to be Marbe, Vishipa Yitzias Mitzrayim. And it takes on a different scope. So whatever it is, a number of theories all along the same lines, whether it's that you have to spell it out, whether it's that you have to relate it to others, whether it's that you have to say it at great length. So that's there's a number of different theories to explain what exactly distinguishes the Pesach night obligation from the daily obligation, but that's basically how it manifests itself. So we have a daily obligation, actually twice a day, and then an obligation that is of greater magnitude coming about once a year. And we don't recite a bracha on this, it's a question why we don't. Some suggest various theories. Some suggest, as we mentioned last week, that one of the popular answers, the two first answers you give when anyone asks why is there no bracha on a given mitzvah, so there's always two places that you start. We spoke about this last week. And at first, you look at the Tshuvas HaRashbah, that if the mitzvah involves somebody else, so then you don't make a bracha on that. So that works for the Pesach night aspect, that if the chiyuv is to relate to somebody else, so maybe you don't make a bracha under such circumstances. And the second address you go to when you want to know why you don't make a bracha is the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef of Hilchos Pir Chamech, where he says that any mitzvah that you fulfill belave, you don't make a bracha on. So that maybe works for the daily obligation, that there are those who say that you could just do mentally, you could just fulfill it internally, or even if you have to spell it out, you're still really fulfilling it internally. That's really where the Kim HaMitzvah is. So some will say that's also not going to get a bracha for that reason. There was a creative suggestion that somebody wrote in one of the journals that the reason you can't make a bracha is because we have two halachas that make it difficult, that conspire to make it difficult to make a bracha on Zechiras Tzias Mitzrayim. One is the halacha of brachas over Las Yashin, you have to make the bracha before you do the mitzvah. And the other is the fact that the mitzvah of Zechiras Tzias Mitzrayim doesn't have any shir. We don't know exactly how much you have to remember Tzias Mitzrayim in order to fulfill it. Pashtus, if you just mention Tzias Mitzrayim, you're going to be yotze. So somebody pointed out once, how exactly are you going to make a bracha? You're going to say, Asher Kishonim itself, so the Zivanu, Al Zeche Yashias Mitzrayim. So by the time you finish the bracha, you'll be Yotze. But the bracha has got to be before the mitzvah. So it's impossible to have a bracha that's going to work. So somebody suggested maybe that's the idea, that you're not able to do it that way. It is a question whether or not women are obligated in Zecheres Yashias Mitzrayim. It's a question whether it's considered to be a mitzvah saseh, Shahazman Grama or not. Which is interesting because it ties in with its Kriya Shema discussion. Actually, Kriya Shema, it's interesting, just to detour for a second. So the Mishnah says the Pharisee that Kriya Shema is considered to be a mitzvah seisha of man grama. So some have asked on this against the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, had a theory, which the big limud zchus for a lot of us, that Tosfos Kriya Shema is a din d'rabbanan. So it's got to be that Tosfos Kriya Shema is d'rabbanan, because otherwise the pasuk is in parallel. The pasuk tells us the obligation of Kriya Shema is the shachbuch of kumecha, so when you're lying down and when you're getting up. So the two should match. So if there's no real zman Kriya Shema at night, that's how we assume, midrabbanan is a gzera, you should, maybe there might be a gzera, it's machlokas of a gzera, there might be a gzera, you should say Kriya Shema before chatzos at night. But really, when our Torah is clear that we pasukim, there's no zman Kriya Shema at night, you can say Kriya Shema all night. So they still say, and the Ketz Mishnah says, it's not fair, so Kriya Shema during the daytime should be the same thing. So they say Kriya Shema all day. So it must be, the fact that there's a Sofzman Kriya Shema, that must be a Din D'Rabban. So the others asked, the Taz and Maganavan asked on him, it can't be. Because according to you, Rabbi Ketz Mishnah, you're telling me that Kriya Shema goes all day. It goes all night and all day, it means it's 24 hours. But the Mishnah says, Mitzvah Zei Shezman Grama. So the Mishnah is explicitly against you. So what would the Ketz Mishnah respond to that? He'd say, no, it's different. There's a Kriya Shema in the daytime and a Kriya Shema at night. It's running for 24 hours, but it takes shifts. It's two different mitzvahs. So apparently there's a machlokas here, as the Shagas Aryeh discusses, as to how do you view a mitzvah that goes for 24 hours, but it's two different mitzvahs. If it's going 24-7, it's always running. But one's a daytime version and one's a nighttime version. So is that called mitzvah Sei Shazman Grama because the daytime is not happening in the night and the nighttime is not happening in the day? Or do we say it's not a mitzvah Sei Shazman Grama because the mice is running all the time? So the other mitzvah that this applies to is Zechiras Yashias Mitzrayim, because Zechiras Yashias Mitzrayim is basically running all the time. But it's a nighttime obligation and a daytime obligation. So is that called the mitzvah Sei Shazman Grama? That was the machlokas aposka, and the Timigradim got involved in, and the Shagas Aryeh got involved in, so it's a little bit of a suffix. But it relates to the Kriya Shema question. And since it generally comes in fulfillment of the pre-asm anyway, it's an interesting connection. Okay, so there's more to say about that one, just to give a little bit of space to each one. So that's as far as Shabbos and Yetzias Mitzrayim is concerned. But the real Inyan of the Yoma that we're concerned with right now is Zachor of Amalek. Zachor of Amalek is what Shabbos Parsha Zachor is named after. And that is a very prominent place among the Zechiras. So many assume that the obligation of reading Zachor in Shul with a minyan is an obligation in HaTorah. That normally Kriyas HaTorah is the Rabbanan, and even the Dalet Parshiyos are probably for the most part the Rabbanan as well, but Zachor is the exception. Zachor is an obligation in HaTorah. So why is that? Well, because the Torah says you have an obligation to remember Amalek. But the truth is, how do you know that means you have to do it with a minyan? And how do you know that means you have to do it with a Sefer Torah? So there are a handful of Rishonim that seem to state this, and these Rishonim are very influential. These Rishonim have been quoted at great length. Even though each one is a little bit of a question if they really mean it. It's most often quoted in the name of the Rush in the 7th Parak of Brachos, where the Rush talks about doing an Aveirus to fulfill a mitzvah, and there he suggests that the mitzvah is going to need a minion. She says, what mitzvah needs a minion? She says, maybe reading Amalek, reading Parshas Zachor. So there's some discussion what exactly he means by that, but it's generally understood that the Rush is saying that you need a Sibur and apparently a Kriyas HaTorah in order to fulfill the mitzvah of remembering Amalek. How does he know that? Where do you find that in the Chumash? So as far as the Sefer Torah is concerned, so the Amudei Or writes that this is a reflection of the fact that the Torah says in reference to Amalek, so of those Zikaron v'Sefer, that the Zikaron should be in a Sefer. So maybe that's where he got the idea that you need a Sefer Torah from. And how do you know you need a minion? Maybe I could read it without a minion. So that they explain, Achronim explained, that this has to do with the fact that there is a connection between remembering Amalek and the war on Amalek. And the war on Amalek is really a mitzvah satzibor. It's a mitzvah that is incumbent upon the congregation as a whole. It's not really a mitzvah sayachid. So therefore, presumably, the mitzvah of remembering Amalek should also specifically be performed b'tzibor. So, okay, let's assume that's true. So let's assume that that's the obligation of HaTorah. Even though, again, there are those who disagree. It's also a Trumas HaDeshen like this. A Trumas HaDeshen, who's Chuvus. Somebody asked him, so I'm going to be, and he said, I'm normally somewhere where they don't have a minion. But Purim, I'm going to make sure to be somewhere with the minion so I can go to the Megillah reading. And the question I'm asking, Mr. Rabbi Truman Sadeshan, is once I'm doing that, should I try to be there for Shabbos as well so I could be there for Shabbos Zachor? And Truman Sadeshan responded, Adarabba, you should not be there for Shabbos. It's more important for you to be there for Zachor than it is to be for Megillah reading, because Megillah reading on Purim doesn't really need a minion. But Zachor, that's the Chiyuv in HaTorah, and you need a minion for that. So that's the way it sounds like from the Shemus HaDeshen that he also signed on to this view. But it's very possible that the Rambam disagreed, the Ramban disagreed, the Brisker Rav has a whole piece in the Rambam in which he points out the Rambam seems to view all the Dalet Parshiyos as being equal rabbinical obligations, none of them being in HaTorah. But again, this view that Zachor is in HaTorah is a popular view. You know, the Mishnah Berurah writes, he doesn't really know where the Makor or the Trumas HaDeshen is from. He's not really sure where the whole thing is based on, but this view that it's Daraisa is a popular view. So, okay, so let's say it's Daraisa, but where do we get the idea of once a year from? So let's read Zachor every day. The Torah doesn't say how often to do it. So let's read Zachor once in a lifetime. You know, why should we do it once a year? Where does that come from? So there is an idea that they attribute to the Chassam Sofer. Even though you don't find this in the Chassam Sofer's Chuvus himself, and there is some reason to think that he may actually disagree with it based on some things that you do find in the Chuvus, but the idea that they quote primarily the Maram Shek, who's one of the great Talmidim of the Chassam Sofer, you find it in his writings, the following idea, that the idea when it comes to Amalek is you have to remember and not forget. So how long does it take to forget? How long do you have to let it pass before you're going to forget? So apparently he suggests there is an idea which we'll call a shir shikha, a period of time after which you start to forget. And apparently that period of time is how long? Apparently it's a year. How do you know it's a year? Because of two gemaras. On the one hand, there's a gemara in the end of Brachos. It says in reference to somebody who passes away, it says, Ein ha-meis mishtakech mehalev ela afir beis chodesh, that it's only after a year that people start to forget about somebody who has passed away. And in addition to that, there is another Gemara in Bava Metzia where the Bava Gemara in the second paragraph talks about the Yeish, talks about people giving up hope on their lost property, and there the Gemara tells you a rule that Stam Yeish was Yud Beis Koyesh. That after a year, people start to give up hope. So you see from here, apparently, that after a year, things start to fade. So therefore, if the Torah says you're not supposed to forget a Malach, you have to remember and not forget, so presumably you have to have a Kriya once every 12 months. So if that's true, so some came up with a Chumran. Again, it's really questionable if Hassan Sofer agreed with this, but there were those based on this idea that Hassan Sofer said that when you have a leap year, you're going to get yourself in trouble. Because when you have a leap year, so we put in an extra month, and we put it in right at the wrong time, right before Adar, just when our 12 months are about to expire, so we have that extra month there. So what do you do then? So that's a question. So some say if that's the case, so if it's a leap year, you should have Kavanah during the summer. Then in the summer, when they read Parshas Kisetze, and they read the actual Psukim of the attack of Amalek, so then you have to have Kavanah at that point in time and try to fulfill it then to make sure 12 months don't pass. And then there's a discussion of C-Pace that Frank has about do you have to make sure the Balkore knows this? Is there a necessity for the Balkore to have Kavanah to be mostly people in the Zechira? Can he be Yotze even if he doesn't have this intent? That's hard to believe he really has to have that type of Kavanah. That's a discussion that the Afghanim have with C-Pace that Frank and others. But if you're going to try to do this Chumrah, so is it something the Balkore has to know about? Is there an Indian to be Motzi you in that sense? So there were those who said, the whole idea is not really necessary. That, and Rabbi Willig once gave a shiur about this when he made this point based on other ayahs, that 12 months doesn't necessarily mean 12 months literally. It means a year. It means that the cycle of a year, every time the cycle starts again, when it kind of reboots, when it hits, when it goes from one Purim and it hits the next Purim, so then things kind of reboot, things kind of refresh. So then, you know, things that haven't been reminded over the past cycle, they tend to be forgotten. But if the year is 13 months, so then it's 13 months. It's not exactly 12 months. And there are others who would disagree, such as the Sat Merav has a tshuva about this, where he disagrees with the whole idea of a Shir Shikha. He says it's not necessarily true that there is such an idea. And he says both the rayas that we brought, they're not necessarily good rayas. What were the rayas that Mehameis Mishtakech Malei Velachayit Beis Chodesh? What does that mean? That means that if somebody is mourning and they're trying to get over it for a year, they've been trying to forget, trying to get past it. So after a year, it starts to work. That's what it means. I mean, when you're trying to get past something, after a year, you start to have hatzlacha. So it doesn't mean that if it's a mitzvah to remember something, you're going to forget it after a year. And the idea of yeish after Yud Beis Chodesh, that means that after a year, if you lost your wallet and you haven't got it back in a year, so after a year, you start to give up hope you're going to get it back. It doesn't mean that you forgot about it. You still remember you had the wallet. You just gave up hope that you're going to get it back. So both of these concepts, both of these proofs are somewhat questionable. And the Sat Merav writes in his Shuvas, and others have this idea as well. It's nothing, this whole idea of the placement of Parsha Zachar has got nothing to do with any Shir Shikha. It has to do with the thematic link between Zachar and Purim. The Chazal wanted that before Purim we should fulfill the mitzvah of Zachar as a reminder of this theme of Purim, and that's why it's there. It's not necessarily a consequence of some 12-month arrangement. It is also a big question when it comes to Parsha Zachar. Again, it's a question, once again, the question of the Chi of Nashim. But on the surface, one should say that women should clearly be obligated. There doesn't seem to be any reason to say not, especially we just established that there is no real set time for it. It could be any time, apparently. So it doesn't seem to be a mitzvah say shazman grama. So one could take the view that women should be obligated, and many did have that view, and many Bizman Hazad, this machlokas continues to go on, Bizman Hazad, we also, we often have special Parsha Zachar readings for women, and the assumption that women are obligated, and this is a tradition from Nachman Adler, the Rebbein of the Chassam Sofer, that he made sure that all the women in his household, it's written in Tzarim, that he made sure that it would all come to Parsha Zachar, because he felt it was an obligation on everybody. And there are others who didn't think so. Others who thought that women were pater. So why should they be pater? Again, it's difficult if it's not in the Sashesha as Mangrama. So Sefer Achinuch has this idea where he writes that it's based on Muhammad, that there is a connection between Zechira Samalek and Muhammad Samalek, and Muhammad Samalek is tied in, and women are not involved in Muhammad. It's based on the Gemara in the beginning of Kedushin. It seems to imply that in general. And many Achronim find that very difficult. Because the problem is the war on Malik is called Mohammed's Mitzvah. And the Mishnah says in Sota that you have a Mechanis Mitzvah, everybody goes out for Mechanis Mitzvah, even a Kala Mechupasa, even a Kala from her Chuppah is going to run out and get involved in a Mechanis Mitzvah. So most Kalas are female, so it seems to be that women are involved in Mechanis Amalek. So that's a difficult point. I understand a lot of back and forth about this, and Shuvah Zeicha Simcha, and Shuvah Starah Chesed. It's a whole discussion how exactly we deal with this. And they said the question exists out of Yom HaZeh. It's still an ongoing machlokes whether or not women are chayav v'smizacher. And so you see many who are enacted to go to great lengths to fulfill this obligation. And then there were those who say, well, it's not so clear that the obligation is there. This is another mitzvah in which we don't make a bracha. Again, that's also an interesting discussion, why not? So there are many who explain that the reason you're not going to make a bracha on this is akin to the reason we don't say halal on the last days of Pesach, that this involves people dying. Mashi Adai Tovim B'yam, the Chazal tell us that Kodesh Baruch Hu said about the mitzvah who are drowning in the river, drowning in the ocean, they're not going to say halal on these last days of Pesach. And so too, some say, therefore, it doesn't mean Ram Shik writes this in his Sefer HaMitzvahs, that we're not going to make a bracha on the war against the Amalek because it involves people dying, and therefore that's not something we can be joyous about. That's something we can give hodah about. That's something we'll do, but to do it happily is the more difficult idea. The Rav has a piece that's printed in the Masori Journal about whether the idea, the previous point that we mentioned about the relationship between Mechamas Amalek and Zechiras Amalek, so you have to understand what exactly is the purpose of Zachar, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, is the purpose that we should remember the attack, or is the purpose that we should remember our obligation to fight them. And connected to that, there actually is a Machlokas Achronim, and Magen Avraham is involved in this, and Mr. Brewer has a whole discussion about this, about whether in order to fulfill Amalek, to fulfill Zechiras Amalek, you need specifically these Pesukim from Kisei that we read, or what about the Pesukim from Parashas B'Shalach that we read a few weeks ago, that is read on Purim, that maybe you can fulfill Zachar with that. So some Achronim thought yes, and some Achronim thought no, it doesn't contain our mitzvah to remember, we have to quote Dafka that Pesuk, it tells us to remember. So that was Machlokas, and that the Rav thought was related to the question of whether or not the mitzvah of Zechira and the mitzvah of Mochama are one package. Okay, so there's more to say about Zachar as well, but just to try to keep the pace. So there are three left, right? So we still have to know about Maimon HaSinai, and Egel HaZav, and Miriam. So those are less obvious how we fulfill them. Maimon HaSinai, some suggest that Chag HaShavuos is the way we remember Maimon HaSinai, that we have a whole Yontif that's devoted to remembering Maimon HaSinai, so therefore that's taken care of. But what about the other two? So the other two is difficult. Doesn't seem like we have an overt fulfillment of Maishe Miriam or the Egel HaZav. So some say the reason we don't have that, and especially when it comes to Maishe Miriam, it comes to both of these really, the Ramban writes in his Hagos and the Sefer HaMitzvahs for Rambam, that these are actual mitzvahs asay that the Rambam forgot. He has that section, mitzvah asay sheshachach haRambam, which is a kind of a funny language to use. It's unlikely that he really forgot. You know, Rambam was sitting at home thinking, wait a minute, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. I don't have it at the printer, you know, I'll leave it. It's unlikely that's the way it happened. The Pashas didn't agree there were mitzvahs, but that's what the Rambam entitled it, mitzvah asay sheshachach haRambam, and included in this list, he says that you have to remember Egel HaZav is a real mitzvah. He writes, Miriam is a real mitzvah, which should be one of the Tayyag mitzvahs. He says in his commentary to Chumash as well, that this is remembering Maish and Miriam is a real obligation from the Tayyag mitzvahs, and it should be listed. And when you're afraid you're going to speak Lashon Hara, so you should remember about what happened to Miriam. So what do we do about this then? So how come we don't have a Shabbos Maish and Miriam? Why can we only have a Shabbos of the Malik? So some suggest that we're in better shape than we used to be, because it wasn't always the case that we read the whole Torah every year. Like Amar says, the different tikkufos in history, it wasn't always set up that way. So nowadays that we actually, first of all, we didn't always have a Kriyas Torah at all. It's generally, it seems to be a Mitzvah Derabanan. So nowadays that we have the whole Torah reigns the whole year. So really all the Zechiras are taken care of through the normal cycle of Kriyas HaTorah. So when it comes to these two, when it comes to Miriam and Egel HaZav, since they represent disgraceful episodes, they represent things that we'd rather forget, but we can't, we're told we have to remember. So we'll remember that, but we're not going to make a special ceremony to do it more than this, because it's already lain in the normal course of the year. But it is interesting when it comes to Egel Hazav, there is another possibility. That one of the four parshiyos mentioned before, that the parshiyos are generally drabanan, and it's Zohar's discussion. There's one other discussion, parshiyos Parah. So parshiyos Parah, there are mysterious hints in Rishonim. So look in the beginning of the second parak of Brachos. So the Gemara there has a statement about whether the Torah was given in every language or was given only in Lashon HaKodesh. So the Rishonim ask, well, what difference to make whether the Torah has to be in Lashon HaKodesh or not? Are we talking about for the purposes of learning? It doesn't seem to be the case. No one says that when you're learning, it has to be the Lashon HaKodesh. You're not allowed to translate. So what's the nafkamina, whether we say the Torah has to be the Lashon HaKodesh or not? For what purposes? So there Tosa says, it must be that biblical obligations of Kriya maybe would have to be in Hebrew if this is the case. So we can't say the normal Kriya HaTorah is that, because it's not a mitzvah min HaTorah. So the Gemara wouldn't be interpreting Sukkim for this purpose unless it was something that's a mitzvah min HaTorah. So a lot of these Rishonim in the second parak of Brachos, they discuss this question. They throw in the list, a short list that they have there, of Zohar and Parshas Bikurim and Kriya Shema and things like that, and it throws in also Parshas Parah. So Mehechi Taishi, where does it say in the Torah you have to read Parshas Parah? So some say it's a typo, that the Rishonim really say Pei, and maybe it means Parshas Purim. Maybe it's a reference to a Malik, and it doesn't mean to say Parshas Parah. Rabbi Shechter and others don't like that shot at all. It appears in too many different Rishonim who aren't in the same tradition. They aren't copying from each other. It's not likely that that's what it means. So it probably is intentional. It means Parshas Parah. So then, where does it come from? So if you look in the Meshech Chachma and Parshas Chukah, she has a whole hesber about the mitzvah of Torah to teach Klal Yisrael about Tumah and Tarah, and that this is a fulfillment of that. But there is another theory that the Malbim has, and others have. I think the Malbim has this in a Sefer on Halacha. He's more well known for a Sefer on Chumash and Nah, but he has a small Sefer on Halacha called the Arches Rachayim. I think it's in there. The Malbim explains that we have a mitzvah of remembering Egel Hazav, and we don't do it. We don't have any Shabbos Parshas Egel. So what's going on? So we can make a shidduch here. We have a mitzvah without a fulfillment, and we have an action without a tzivui. So maybe it's the same thing. That maybe really when we read Parshas Parah, that is a mitzvah min HaTorah, because that's the fulfillment of the obligation of Egel Hazav. Because think about it. So why do we have to remember Egel Hazav? Because we want to make fun of ourselves? Because we want to cry about it? So many suggest that the idea is really to remember tshuva, is to know, not to remember the downfall, but to remember that it's possible to come back. So therefore, we have this idea to remember the ability to come back from falling. So therefore, we don't want to focus on the Egel Hazav, we want to focus on the Parah Aduma. Because what's the relationship? We know Chazal tell us that there is a theme in the Parah Aduma that it's a tikkun for the Egel Hazav. That the Egel Hazav represents the Avera, and Parah Aduma represents the tikkun, and the Chazal say the mother, the cow, should come and clean up the mess of the child, of the calf. This is a tikkun for the Avera. So therefore, we want to remember the remedy. We don't remember the Avera. We want to remember the idea of how it's possible to come back. So it's possible that that's the way we fulfill the mitzvah of Egel Hazav to this idea of Parshas Parah. Okay, so what do we see? So we see radically different approaches in Halacha to all of these six tefillahs. They're not really performed in any way comparable to each other. Each one, and no two are the same. And that's in itself a little bit of a wonder. So it could be like those Achronim who thought that this is an instance of Masar HaKasa of HaChachamim. That may perhaps be the key. But in general, it's interesting how these all play out differently. But the whole concept of Zechira is striking, because we would generally assume that one's supposed to remember the whole Torah. And we have specific commandments about that as well. So what's the implication here? That Yom Kippur we don't have to know about, and Kashrus we don't have to remember, and that everything else is optional, and there's only six things we really have to remember? Yeshiva curriculum could be much shorter. And it's very hard to believe that that's really the case. So it seems that we're talking about a different type of Zechira here. And it's interesting to note there is a whole discussion in Achronim and Choshen Mishpat that we know there is a halacha of Hashra. If you want to get yourself executed in Beis Din, very, very difficult. You have to hire a fancy lawyer to get yourself executed in Beis Din. It takes a lot of paying attention to the rules. So part of what you have to do is you have to have Hashra, you have to be properly warned, and you have to accept the hasra, and it has to be in front of witnesses, etc., etc. So it's another condition that makes it very difficult, that the hasra has to be toch kidei dibur. It has to be within, must be brought here, maybe we'll say 9 seconds, if you want to be very expansive in your interpretation of toch kidei dibur. But if more than 9 seconds, probably 3 seconds, we'll say it's 9 seconds. If you want to let more than 9 seconds pass between the hasra and the avera, so the hasra expires. So, what's the shot on that? Rashi writes in Subas, we're afraid you might forget. It's a very striking idea. You're about to kill somebody and somebody tells you it's lesser to kill. You're like, oh, I didn't know that, thank you so much, I'm not going to do it now. And then a minute later you do it anyway. Wow, come on, it was 30 seconds ago, you think I'm going to remember? It's very hard to believe you're going to forget in 30 seconds. It's Kil Sachoshen and Simon Sachas. It's a very hard time with this. What exactly is going on here? Zalman Nechemi Goldberg Shlita has a sefer on Hilchos Eidus, where in the introduction, it's very worth reading. He goes into a lot about the principles of learning and memory, and he says, he talks about this close there. What exactly is going on? You're going to forget about, you're going to forget in 10 seconds that somebody just told you they're liable for execution? So the Rav had a mahalach here that Hasra isn't what we think it is. That you think that Hasra is just there to make sure you're aware of the issue, that you know about it, it's not what it means. So when we say that we're only going to execute somebody who doesn't have Avera B'mezid, that doesn't just mean that he knows about the Issa. It means that he's thinking right now about the Issa, that's in his active consciousness. That the Rav had explained that the idea of Hasra is to measure Al-Heichan Hu Paregol, to what extent is this person rebelling against the Torah? Is he actually, not only is he doing something he knows is wrong, but is he thinking about it in his active consciousness as he's performing this action? And it's only such a level that is worthy of execution. If you're mamish rebelling to such an extent that you're thinking about it as you're doing it, so that's what Hasra is supposed to ascertain. So even though, 30 seconds later, if you ask somebody, is it also to kill? Yeah, he'll remember that it's also to kill. But it's not on his mind in the sense of thinking about the issue. That's the purpose of Hasra. So this helps to illustrate, which we could probably have guessed anyway, that there's remembering and there's remembering. You know, there's remembering in the sense of it being in your mental file cabinet, so if somebody asks you about it, you can reference it and pull it out. And then there's a zechira, that something has to be in your mind all the time. It has to be constantly in your awareness. And apparently, there are a handful of principles that the Torah says these you really have to be thinking about all the time, that these form the philosophical basis for Judaism, and these have to be a part of your constant awareness. And then within that, we could suggest that then the Chazal were left to determine what it takes to make these concepts constantly on our consciousness. So if that's true, then it means that these six concepts together form a certain philosophical framework. So how could that be? So you could suggest as follows, that the first of the Zechiras we're going to say is Zechiras HaShabbos. And what does Shabbos remind us of? Shabbos is there to tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Right? Step one of Jewish philosophy is you have to know that God created the world, that the world didn't just come out of nowhere, that it's not an eternal thing, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it into place. That's step one of Jewish philosophy, 101. Okay, so it could be you could know that, but you could say, all right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, but he's not involved anymore. And it's a deist philosophy. You could say he created the world, but he ceases to actively be involved. So then the next zechira we have to remember is zechira Yetzias Mitzrayim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu actively guides history, that he's involved directly, that it's not the case that he just set it into motion and created the laws of physics and let everything play out, but that he continues to actively be involved directly with history. So that's step two of Jewish philosophy, and that's crucial, and that's what Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim helps us to remember. So then you could say, okay, fine. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and he continues to run it, but that doesn't have anything to do with us. So that doesn't put any responsibilities on us. We get to watch the show, but we don't have to do anything. So therefore, the next major step in Jewish philosophy, this one's a pretty big one, is we have to remember Maamar Har Sinai, that we have to remember that not only is it going in that direction, but it's coming in this direction also, that we have obligations in response, and that's what Maamar Har Sinai reminds us of. But the consequence of that is you're going to say that we're put on this world to fulfill certain obligations. So then you could say, well, if we mess up, if we fail in these obligations, so it's over. We have no reason for existing. There's nothing to do. So then we're reminded that another major yesod of Jewish philosophy, which was created before the world, right? Tshuva was created before the world. So Egel HaZav reminds us of that. That even if we fall, that it is possible to come back. So together, these four zechiras form four major steps within our philosophy. The guy created the world, he continues to be involved, he asked something of us, he gave us responsibilities, and he also has cleared the path for us to come back if you should stumble from these responsibilities. So what about the other two? What about Amalek and Maaseh Miriam? So it's interesting, you wouldn't necessarily put the two together, but the truth is, together they do form kind of a match set. They are, in a sense, two halves of the same coin. But if we think about Amalek, so why is it so important that we remember Amalek? What's the message of that? So it could be that the reason we're told to remember Amalek with such emphasis is that we have to understand that there is good and bad in the world. That the world is not just made up of good and differently good and less good and somewhat good, but there is bad, and bad that can't be fixed, bad that can't be lifted up, and that bad that has to be erased. And it could be that maybe that's why Chazal or the Torah, depending on your view, insisted that this mitzvah be performed the tzibur with the Kriyas HaTorah. There are two things that tend to bring things up, that tend to erase flaws, are the Torah, the Matar, and the tzibur, the Koach HaTzibur, is able to fix things. So maybe in order to remember that Amalek represents a level of evil that's not fixable, so even with the Kriyas HaTorah and with the Tzibur, still in that context we're taught that Amalek is Amalek and bad is bad. And we shouldn't be confused and say, well, there's good things mixed in, but if Amalek represents this idea that there is bad that cannot be outweighed by whatever good is mixed in. And the flip side of that is Miriam. So what is the point of Miriam? So Miriam, as the Ramban tells us, and as we know from the context, the purpose of Miriam is to remember the Yisr of Lashon Hara. So Lashon Hara, so you could say, it's related, we know, to the Yisr of Dibos Haaretz, speaking bad about the land of Israel. And both of these Yisrim, you could say, you know, it's not really so fair. Why should there be an Yisr of Dibos Haaretz, an Yisr of Lashon Hara, if I have bad things to say, and they're true, by definition they're true, so why shouldn't I be able to say them? So it could be that the yisod of both of these yisurim is that even though these things are true, if you truly appreciated what Eretz Yisrael represents or what your fellow Jew represents, so these things wouldn't make your radar screen. You wouldn't be able to talk about them. The fact that you're able to talk about these bad things is an indication that you're not really aware of the proper perspective. That basically the point being that there are some things that are so good that the bad that's mixed in doesn't take away from the good. So in that sense, it's kind of the flip side of Amalek. That Amalek is telling you there are some things that are so bad that the good that's mixed in doesn't take away. And Lashon Hara and Dibos Haaretz are telling you there are some things that are so good that the bad that's taken in doesn't take away. So the point being that we have extremes of good and bad, and the rest of the world will fall somewhere in the middle, but we're only able to appreciate where it falls or how it falls if we have a clear view of right and wrong. And therefore, that also becomes two of the key principles in life to remember. So basically, together, the six zechiras would then form the system that we're told to remember God created the world. He continues to be involved. He put requirements on us, but he's ready to take us back if we fall. And that there's good and bad on either pole that we're able to see the world in between. Okay, so just to quickly review, we spoke about the fact that basically six zechiras. Again, it depends how you count. Some count more, some count less. But it's commonly understood there to be six. And different reactions to each six, that the Shabbos is basically performed through Kiddush and through shopping for the Shabbos and through mentioning Yom Yom Shlishi for Shabbos, etc. And then we mentioned the Chereshis Mishrayim, which is obligatory every day, day and night, and it's performed through the third paragraph of Kriyashma, and the question of what's the difference between the daily affairs of Mitzrayim and Pesach night. So there are various suggestions, either you have to go into more detail Pesach night, or you have to say it out loud, or you have to say it to others, etc., etc. And then we discuss the question of whether it's Mitzvah Seis of Manglam or not, which may depend on a Machos to post them in general. If we have a Mitzvah that's 24-7, but it's two shifts, is that called Mitzvah Seis of Manglam? And the question of why there's no Bracha on this Mitzvah, it could be either because of fulfillment it's belayed, or because it involves talking to somebody else, or because someone suggested, because the mitzvah would be fulfilled by the time you finish the bracha, so therefore bracha is functionally impossible. And then we talked about Amalek, the obligation to remember Amalek, that the Rosh and the Trumas Hadesh and the Sinus Minat Torah, to lay in Amalek with the Sefer Torah. Others may disagree. Perhaps the Rambam and Ramban didn't necessarily see this parsha itself as a deraisa, just saw a deraisa to remember it, but not necessarily in this context. If you assume that it is deraisa like that, so we mentioned the suggestions that the Sefer Torah is from Ksozo Sikaran B'Sefer, and the Minyan idea is from the Mitzvah Satzibor of Mechamas Amalek, and then we discussed the question of why do we do it once a year before Purim. So we mentioned the idea of the Shir Shicha that takes 12 months to forget something based on Avelis and based on Yeish, and then the question was what about a leap year? 13 months passed. We mentioned the Chumrat have Kavan and the Parshas Kiseitze, and the question of whether you have to tell the Baal Torah to be motzi in that or not, and the view that others had that it doesn't really mean 12 months, it means a cycle of a year. When the cycle passes, that's when it comes up. And then the view of the Sabma Rav, that the whole concept isn't true, that both was right, isn't that compelling, and that really it's just a Chazal put it there to connect it to Purim because of the thematic connection. So we discussed the question of whether it's misdecisions on Gum or not. It seems like it shouldn't be based on that whole discussion. There's no specific time. So nonetheless, there were those who felt that were Paturos. The Chinuch explained that based on Mechama. That's a question whether that's compelling or not, because the Gemara and the Mishnah and Sota that Mechamas Mitzvah Nashim are involved in as well. So that continues to be a Machlokas Adi Omazeh. And then we talked about the question of whether there's a Bracha, why there is no Bracha on a Malik. The preeminent view that it seems to be because it involves people dying, and therefore, just like there's no halal on the last days of Pesach, there's no bracha on Amalek either. And then I talked a little bit about the Rav's idea that whether or not the mitzvah of remembering Amalek and fighting Amalek are really the same mitzvah or not, and maybe that would affect the question of whether the other section of Amalek and Parshas B'Shalach we read on Purim, whether or not that could count. And then we talked about what about the other three. So Maamar HaSinai, maybe Shavuos takes care of. But as far as the other two, Egel HaZav and Miriam, and the Ramban writes that Miriam and Egel are real mitzvahs, that the Rambam should have listed, writes that in his glosses in the Rambam and his commentary to Chumash. So apparently those really should be done. So some suggest that since they're Gnai, we rely on the Kriyas HaTorah of the normal Parsha. And when it comes to Egel HaZav, some say this is what the Rishonim mean when they say that Parshas Parah could be deraisa, so maybe it means that this is the fulfillment of the Egel HaZav, since we don't want to remember the Aveir, we want to remember the Tshuva, so we choose to do it through the Parah Aduma. So then we discuss, so basically, however you take it, so why do these all six, first of all, why they all have different performances? That could be an example of Masar HaKasav HaChachamim, and that's how some Makronim understood. But still, what sets us aside from the rest of the Torah? Then you have to remember the whole Torah. So we mentioned that there's remembering, and there's remembering, and there's knowing, and there is having an active consciousness. That's what we see by Hasra Torah HaDibur, that it's possible for the Hasra to expire. So it doesn't just mean knowing about it, it means having it on your active awareness, and apparently Zechir is also about your active awareness. So it could be that these six principles are especially singled out because they form key values in Jewish philosophy, that Shabbos reminds us that God created the world, the Yetzias Mitzrayim reminds us that God continues to be involved in the world, and Maamar HaSinai tells us that God has put responsibilities upon us, and Parah Aduma reminds us that we can come back even if we fall from these responsibilities, and Amalek and Miriam together teach us the values of good and bad, that Amalek teaches us there are some things that are so bad that even that which is good mixed in doesn't outcome that, and that's why maybe we have a Sefer Torah and a Minyan to show that even those things are not able to lift it up, and that Miriam shows us there are some things that are so good, even the bad can't that way, and that's why we have an Esther of Lashon Hara and we have an Esther of Dibur Haaretz to show us that if we are focusing on the bad and those things, we're losing perspective. And perspective seems to be the key, so that's what these six together help us to focus. And on that note, we will stop, and I should have a wonderful week. So next week, there'll be more Purim stuff. Okay. There you go.
Have a terrific week.